Don't pull out that arrow. I want to know, first of all, who shot it? What caste did that person belong to? What kind of bow did he use? What feather is used to guide the arrow? And who made the arrow? And when you tell me the answer to all of those questions, then I'll let you pull the arrow out. I don't remember exactly how Malunkia put the response to this, but the story in the end, I suppose, is being spoken to us as much as to Malunkia Putta. It's a way of saying, don't be concerned about a lot of doctrinal issues that have to do particularly with the origin of things. What we're concerned about here in the Buddhist tradition is the pragmatic removal of suffering. We want to get that arrow out and not speculate too much about where the arrow came from. We need to know something about its origin in order to remove it, fine. But otherwise, let's focus on the pragmatic issue of removing human suffering. You also find that the tradition is expressed in very simple and memorable verses, as you would expect in an oral tradition. You know, proverbs are one of the ways, of course, that traditional teachings are conveyed religiously, especially in an oral tradition like this. I'll read you a couple of them, just to give you a flavor for what these proverbs sound like. They come from a text called the Dhammapada, or the Words of the Teaching, one of the very early collections of the Buddha's spoken teaching. Not to do any evil, to cultivate good, and to purify one's mind. This is the teaching of the Buddhas. So simple. I can hear it being spoken to me by Buddhist monks in Sri Lanka and in Thailand. What is the Buddha's teaching? Don't do evil. Do good and purify your mind. Now, it seems extremely simple, and I suppose if somebody told you, well, what's my teaching? Don't do evil, do good. Well, it's hard to disagree with that, but notice this little added bit at the end. Also purify your mind. That's Buddhist. That's the Buddha speaking. You've got to find some way to purify the mind of ignorance and desire, and then you can really strike at the root of issues of evil and good. So in its simplicity, it also conveys a distinctive message that tells us something about this early community. Another proverb like this: you are your own protector. What other protector can there be? With yourself fully controlled, you obtain a protection that is hard to obtain. Another statement, very simple. We know that Buddhists are self-reliant. We know they're concerned about achieving nirvana for themselves and not depending on others. This seems simply to be an affirmation of that. But this word protector has a little hook in it. It's also the word that you can use to refer to God. So the Buddha is saying here, you are your own God. You are your own God. What other God can there be? With yourself fully controlled, you obtain a protection that is hard to obtain. Strong teaching. Stands the Buddhist tradition up in opposition to much of what was happening in Hindu life at that time. So you get a flavor here, even in the simplicity of the teaching, of some of the distinctive aspects of the teaching of the Buddha. Now, I should close by mentioning one more important institutional development in the history of this early community. This is somewhat problematic to interpret, but it is important for our own consideration of Buddhist history. It's called the Second Buddhist Council. And according to some accounts, it took place about 100 years after the Buddha's death. And it was staged in response, held in response, to an incipient sectarian split within the Sangha. When one group, it seems, wanted to overturn and revise some of the basic stipulations of the Buddhist discipline. Sometimes the opposing party is caricatured in a way that seems to attack its moral standing. But at the core of the dispute seems to be some kind of a disagreement about the use of gold and silver and in the carrying of condiments from one day to the next. Some people thought you should be able to adjust the discipline to make this possible, and some thought that you had to stick strictly according to the traditional discipline. Now, out of this split came two parties, the Stavyravadas, or the elder, the doctrine of the elders, who were the conservative party, and the Mahasanghikas, or the great community party, that were the liberals. They split and didn't recognize each other's interpretation of the discipline. Now, out of this split came eventually 18 separate schools of traditional Buddhism, and began the process of sectarian division that led eventually to the split between the Mahayana and the traditional forms of discipline that we'll discuss when we come to the Mahayana in a later lecture.